Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is for my friends Marcus, Mike, and Todd. Thank you for voting me as the most impressive debut at Raw of this decade. Thank you. I send you a big hug. And for all those, listen to WrestleChat Radio from your friend Angel Garza. And remember, el Latino está en la casa, baby.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour or so, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Last night, for all intent and purposes, began the era of Bruce Pritchard and Vince McMahon. Bruce Pritchard taking over the reins for Paul Heyman on Raw, which in essence is basically just handing them over to Vince McMahon. And we'll be talking about the results. But the very first thing we need to talk about is there were fans in attendance. Yes, that's right. Not Performance Center trainees, maybe not typical fans either, but fans. And by that I mean people who aren't training to be professional wrestlers. Now, I don't know whether they were friends. I don't know whether they worked at the Performance Center or there were people who were friends of people who worked at the Performance Center. I don't know who they were, but they certainly were not wrestlers. And they were in attendance and they were mixed in with some of the Performance Center alumni, or whatever you want to call them. And this marks the first time in a very long time, obviously, that non-wrestlers or trainees were allowed to be in attendance. They weren't packed. You know, they had a few scattered here and there behind the plexiglass. But they were there. So that does mark at least a somewhat return to allowing non-workers to be in the facility and watch their show. And wouldn't you know it, the minute that happens, the dreaded COVID-19 strikes and a Performance Center wrestler has tested positive. Now, this is a Performance Center worker who was in the crowd at a Tuesday taping. And so for that reason, everybody that was in that crowd has got to take the COVID-19 test. And that has delayed the tapings. They were supposed to do a lot of tapings for a main event and 205 Live and another Raw and SmackDown and a couple of things today. They're not going to be doing any of that today. They may have to wait till tomorrow to do it. Maybe even later. We're not 100% sure because of the testing and how long it's going to take to get the results back. And I've heard a couple of shows saying, this is what you get. This is what you get when you ignore the rules. This is what you get when you allow fans back in and you start to slack off a little bit and here it comes again. Calm down. Calm down. I don't know where people got the twisted theory that testing positive for COVID-19 is a death sentence and that it means everyone around you is now going to die or has a great chance of dying. I don't know who put that into your head. But I will start this broadcast by giving you a little bit of context. A local store by me, where someone I know works, had 5 people who came down positive with COVID-19. They were quarantined for 14 days. They went back to work. They didn't feel so great. They weren't hospitalized. They weren't on any special medications. They weren't at death's door. And after 14 days, they went right back to the store, No one else got it. We have been conditioned as not even just a country because it's worldwide. We've been conditioned to believe, oh my God, COVID, that's it. It's everything's done. I don't know. I don't understand this. At this stage, the COVID virus is getting weaker and weaker and weaker. There are far less deaths. There are far less hospitalizations. There is no, as a matter of fact, the death toll is going down, 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 down. And so are the hospitalizations. Now, the cases may be going up because you're testing more people. Okay, so as you test more people are going to test positive, but that doesn't mean that they're incredibly sick or they're going to be hospitalized or they're going to infect you and kill you. I don't understand where this is coming from, and the panic is driving me crazy. If you go to Walmart, you're in a store with someone who has COVID. I promise you, you are. The chances are very high that if you go to Walmart and shop, or you go to your local grocery store and shop, someone has been in there during the course of that day or is in there right now who would test positive. Okay? This is not the end of the world, folks. This is not a reason to everybody pull back. No more fans at wrestling. No more. I guess you just all want to stay in a hole for the rest of your life. I guess that's what everybody wants. Calm down. Person who has it's going to be just fine. Obviously not experiencing too many symptoms. I guarantee you, even if a couple of people test positive that were there, they're going to be fine. At this stage, this thing is a bad flu. And unless you have some severe medical issues, you're going to be just fine. 80,000 people a year die from the flu, and nobody says, my God, they have the flu. Put a mask on them, sanitize them, put them in a body bag. Seal them away in their basement for 6 months. Nobody says that. I don't want the flu. It's unpleasant. I don't want pneumonia. But people do get it. And we've never, ever done this over the flu and pneumonia. The WWE can't have 35 people in their building, but you can have 100,000 people marching in the street? I just want you to put that into context for a minute. If it's wrong for the WWE to have 24 people in a building, how can there be 100,000 people in the street? Shoulder to shoulder, arm to arm, yelling and screaming, spraying out all that liquid you're not supposed to spray, remember? Calm down. Nobody on the news is saying, we're all going to die because there's people in the streets and they're not following social distancing, so that's it. This city's done. Nobody's saying that. Ask yourself why they're not saying that. If this thing is so deadly, why aren't they saying that? If this thing is so deadly, why don't they literally have the military in hazmat suits round these people up and say, no, you're going to kill the world if you do this. You're not allowed. They're not doing that. They're not doing that because they know it's not that deadly, folks. Simple as that. So one guy tests, or girl, I don't know which it is, tests positive, and all of a sudden, everybody's calling for the WWE to shut it down. That's it. No more fans. Maybe no more wrestlers. Maybe no more wrestling. And we have scared the public to the point where wrestling fans are saying maybe it would be better if there's no wrestling. Mike, I'm not sure what to say about this. I mean, I'm sorry to hear that somebody tested positive for COVID, but there is absolutely no cause for alarm here. It's not like they're deadly sick and they're hospitalized and they're on a ventilator. They just tested positive. Like I said, I know a store where 5 people tested positive and they were back to work in 2 weeks.
Right, and that's the thing. They do not get it. I mean, these are the same people that are talking about this stuff if there's any uptick in the cases, they want to shut the economy down again. I know this isn't a political show, but this has a lot to do with it. If they do that and we're going to force the WWE to stop having wrestling and stop having fans in the stands and all this stuff, well, what's going to happen to the WWE then? know?
Wrestling will cease to exist very, very shortly. Okay, now here's the deal. Here's the deal. We go out to these events all the time. Baseball games, movie theaters, shopping malls, restaurants, wrestling events. People are sick. They're coughing. They're sneezing. I just got over the flu, but I got tickets for this thing. I'm going out to dinner. I've been sick for a while. You could be infected by them too. You can be just as easily infected by them. And they're not wearing masks, and they're not social distancing, and they're not, shutting the world down. I'm going to say something, and people are going to get mad at me, but I'm going to say it anyway. You do realize that the more people that test positive, the weaker the virus is, right? You do realize that if the virus is strong, it gets weaker as it transfers, because your immune system fights it off to a certain extent, and then the strain that you give that person is already partially fought off, and it gets weaker and weaker, and that's how a virus goes away. Okay, the H1N1 flu that killed so many people is now like just flu type B, and nobody dies from it because it's just a weak strain of the flu now. That's how it became a weak strain of the flu. So let's not panic because one employee got COVID. Do you know how many people are employed by the WWE? More people that are employed by that store that I was telling you about, I can tell you that. And if five people from that store tested positive, and all five are fine, none of the five were hospitalized, none of the five were on death's door, and all of the five returned to work after 14 days, then I'm not sure why we're pulling this panic button. I'm really not. I'm not sure why it's, close everything down again. No more fans in there, and the wrestlers can't be, they're going to have to be head to toe covered in, forget it. Okay, just forget it. Stop with the nonsense already. Stop with the fear-mongering. I'm not afraid of it. If I get it, I get it. I'll be fine in 14 days, just like everybody else, except grandma or grandpa, who's 97 and already has 47,000 other health issues, or someone who has leukemia, or someone who has emphysema, or someone who has horrible, horrible respiratory issues. Yes, of course that could be deadly. You know what else can be deadly? A bee sting, if you're allergic. You understand? So should the world, wear a beekeeper's outfit just in case? Because you might not know you're allergic? Calm down, folks. Calm down. I'm glad to see the fans back. And damn it, if the minute the WWE lifts that ban and there's somebody within 50 miles of me holding a show, I'm going. Anyway. That being said, we'll see what the WWE does. I mean, maybe they'll go back to no fans to satisfy the mob. Maybe they'll cancel SummerSlam and next year's WrestleMania and every other pay-per-view because of the mob. Maybe they'll start putting dummies in seats, or maybe they'll superimpose the audience over the videotape and green screen them so it looks like there really is an audience holding up Randy Orton sucks signs. Maybe they can do that. Is that what you want? Is this the new way you want to live, in fear? In fear of every little thing, I might get it. I'm 20 years old and I'm perfectly healthy and I might get it and I'll crumble and die like a 99-year-old mummy. No, you won't. Calm down. God almighty, how easily we're scared into a rabbit hole, huh? So what do we start with Monday night? Well, we start with Randy Orton, who comes out to ringside and basically takes credit for retiring Edge. We know, of course, that Edge has underwent a tricep repair. It's pretty serious. I'm hearing 6 months, minimum 8 months on the far end. That's a long time. It's a long, long time, and it's too long to carry this feud on. And the WWE knows that. So now they got to do something different with Randy Orton because they had that third match ready to go and it was going to be a big one, and a monkey wrench got thrown into the works, didn't it? So out comes Christian, and we know Christian's not the answer because he can't really be cleared to wrestle. And Christian basically says, listen, you know, you're a snake in the grass and you're coming out here pretending you're doing it for Edge and you didn't and blah, blah, blah. And Randy Orton backs him into a corner and basically says, if you're a man, you'll fight me tonight. If you're a coward, you'll refuse. It'll be an unsanctioned match. So the WWE can't stop it. Well, that's silly. Of course the WWE could stop it. It's their ring. But still. And the stage is set. And then we're told, well, we're going to have a couple of other matches of note. One is the rematch between Asuka and Nia Jax. And then Drew McIntyre is going to team with R-Truth to take on MVP and Bobby Lashley. So the stage is kind of set. The Christian thing, look, if you're going to build up Randy Orton, which obviously you are, and I think it's pretty obvious, when Randy Orton says something like, I am the best wrestler of all time, and I don't need a belt to prove it, you already know who the next big feud for Drew McIntyre is. You already know. And it's a good one, because I'd said on yesterday's show, that's the direction I would go. That's absolutely the direction I would go. Randy Orton's your top heel now on Raw. Remember I said they don't have a top heel? Well, now they do. It sure as hell ain't Bobby Lashley. It sure as hell ain't this new Seth Rollins. I don't even know what the Seth Rollins thing is. We'll get into it in a minute, but this is getting not good. But I thought this was okay, Mike. I think that Randy Orton's doing a good job. He's more of an old school, you know, second generation guy, and he knows how to play that bad guy without overplaying his hand.
And here's something else to think about. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the next feud is Randy Orton is the is Drew, you know, Galloway, Drew McIntyre. All right. Let's say he wins that feud and wins the belt, but that won't happen until, you know, maybe a couple months down the line. Well, he then goes up and has him run as a champion, and then Edge comes back. And then they have their match, and Edge gets his vengeance match, and then that title means something. Not that it doesn't, but then the title means something. That would be a good way to go, you know. I don't want to see Drew McIntyre lose the title, but if Drew McIntyre loses the title to, you know, Randy Orton, there's branches on that tree.
There's definitely branches on the tree depending on what Edge wants to do. I mean, at this stage, Edge might say, I'm done. Okay, I gave it my best shot. I had two matches and got seriously, seriously hurt and had to undergo the knife, and it's just not going to happen. If that's the case, then I don't know what you want to do about that. And I don't know if you want to put a title on a guy who only has a contract to do three or four matches, so that could be another problem. But certainly Randy Orton has done his job, and he's become the top heel on Raw again, which is a good thing. We needed one. Now we go to the back where Angel Garza and Zelina Vega are being interviewed. And basically Angel Garza is asked the question, do you think you cost Andrade his shot at Apollo's U.S. title? And he kind of answers it by saying, look, you know, I'm sure he's upset, and sometimes you don't always get what you want. And, you know, I don't feel I had anything to do with it. Andrade comes over, and again, he doesn't speak great English, but he was able to say, well, I hope you win your match tonight against Kevin Owens, but if you don't, I hope you'll get over it. And Garza knows what that means, and Garza stares at him, and he stares at Andrade, and Zelina Vega looks worried, and we know what's coming because we called it. We called it from about the minute Andrade came back and had Angel Garza in his crew with him. And to my mind, it certainly looks like Garza is going to be the face. That's to my mind, because Garza really didn't cost him the belt. Garza was attempting to help him distract Apollo Crews, and it was Andrade who allowed that distraction to distract him, so it's not really Garza's fault. And you know Zelina Vega is going to side with Andretti because that was her original guy. She tells him they got to get along, and we get a match with Angel Garza and Kevin Owens. And sure enough, Andretti plays a role in this match, distracts Garza. Kevin Owens gives him the stunner. Garza loses and then is very upset with Andretti, who doesn't seem terribly upset that he cost him the match. And Zelina Vega has to interfere and say, look, it's time you guys, you both want the same thing. I don't know what she means by that. It's time you start fighting together. She means they both want the U.S. belt. I don't know how they'd fight together to get it, but whatever. That's what she said. I'm sure they're not going to be a tag team. You both want the same thing is kind of weird to say. Andretti seems, yeah, whatever with it. But Garza is the one who said, did you see what happened? Did you just see what he did? Did you just witness that? And she's like, yes, yes, yes. There's no doubt in my mind that Garza is going to be the face in this situation. No doubt in my mind. And this is going to implode, and it's going to implode very quickly. Now, the problem with this, if there is a problem, is that, well, I think these are going to be a great series of matches. Both of these guys deserve a really good push because both of these guys are really, 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 really good at what they do. And Garza can't be the squeaky clean good guy. If he is, he's going to fail. If he's going to be that romantic, I'm not doing anything wrong, I'm just a guy who loves the ladies, he's going to fail. He needs to be Eddie Guerrero. He needs to be that, I'll cheat if I have to, I'll manipulate if I have to, but I'm kind of doing it to the bad guys. If that's what he's going to do, then he'll be highly successful because he's really good at it. Really good at it. If not, it's not going to work. So we'll see what they do with Angel Garza, Mike, but I think our premonition has come true now, and we're going to be seeing Andretti and Angel Garza relatively soon.
Right, and we really should. And you're right about the other thing, too. Think about it. Eddie Guerrero was doing the Latino heat for a while, and then all of a sudden, we started to see him in the low rider and all that stuff, and lie, cheat, and steal came on. So he went from Latino heat to lie, cheat, and steal, right? So
yep.
I think that's probably the way they're going to go with Garza. Yeah, for a while they're going to keep him doing the whole kissing the women, especially when we have a lot more fans, you know, because that's what got him over in the first place. You know,
right.
That type of thing, giving the roses out and kissing the women and all that stuff. That's what got him over in the first place. But you're right on the fact that he cannot be the squeaky clean guy. It's not going to work.
Right.
So they got the we'll talk about what happened with Apollo Crews later, but
right.
You know.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he's going to have to be more like Eddie Guerrero than, you know, Rey Mysterio, let's put it that way. He can't be the squeaky clean face, Todd, and do his shtick to the best of his ability.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said about Angel Garza, and like you said, he's got to do like an Eddie Guerrero, a little bit of Eddie Guerrero and Roddy Piper. I remember Roddy Piper did the same thing to bad guys.
Right, yep.
And doing like the cheating, the poke in the eye, the rink in the eye, stuff like that. He's got to do that. Like Piper and Guerrero did it.
Right. You know, Angel Garza's got to be the Zorro of the WWE, okay? He's got to fight the bad guys, but not necessarily do it as clean and wonderfully as, you know, Bob Backlund would have when he was Mr., you know, All-American. You got to have that guy who's not afraid to take the shortcuts, not afraid to bluff the people, not afraid to, you know, lie, cheat, and steal, as Eddie Guerrero used to say, to get the job done. If he becomes that, he's going to be big in the WWE. He's going to be big because he's got all the talent in the world. Number one, he's quite young yet. And for somebody that young to be that good at what he does, both on the microphone and in the ring, I can't imagine what he's going to be 3-4 years from now. You got something major with him. If you do it right, you probably have something major with him. And I think the WWE knows it. I really do. They're usually blind and oblivious to stuff like this, but I don't think they're blind and oblivious to this. I'll tell you why, because his new shirt, his first shirt came out and it just said Angel Garza with angel wings. The new one says Lethal Lothario. Well, and it has roses on it and wings. And you say to yourself, well, Lethal Lothario, well, Lothario is, you know, a lover, a romantic, whatever. It sounds like a face shirt to me. And I think that's where this is probably heading. And I don't think this is an accident that they keep picking Charlie Caruso as the object of his affection. So I think maybe something's going to happen. Maybe Zelina Vega, something's going to happen between her and Charlie. I don't know. Something's going to happen that's going to flip Garza. And I think Andretti's going to probably end up being the springboard for Garza to go a little bit farther, which is a shame because Andretti shouldn't be anybody's springboard. Andretti should be on a fast track to the main event too. But I think when Vince looks at both Andretti and Angel Garza, he sees Andretti as a more seasoned athlete who he can count on for great matches. But when he sees Garza, I think he sees this is the person the Latino community is going to get behind. That the women are going to love, that the guys are going to think is kind of a cool whatever. I just think Vince sees more in him, and he speaks the language very well. And he gets all the inflections and facial expressions. He knows how to incite the crowd. And again, we were the first ones to call it. He walked out that night of his debut, and very few people knew who he was. Very few. I'm going to say in that audience, if 20% of the audience knew who he was, that's high. You could have heard a pin drop. Here's my new guy while Andretti's recovering, Angel Garza. And people are like, who the hell is that guy? Some thin, you know, young Latino guy, big deal. In 5 minutes, they were ready to riot. 5 minutes. And he had him eating out of the palm of his hand. And if you think Vince McMahon and company didn't sit up in their chair a little bit and say, whoa, 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 what just happened here? What kind of reaction is that from a guy who just came in cold, no intro, no nothing? He didn't get a video package coming soon, coming soon, coming soon. He got nothing. And in 5 minutes, he had the audience eating out of the palm of his hands. That is a great, big, giant, flashing neon sign that says he's got what it takes. And you can't ignore that. So, Mike, I think he's on to bigger and better things probably.
I think he is, too, and that's the thing. And we talked about the building of this sort of Latino division. I mean, you've got not only him and Apollo, not Apollo, but and Andretti, but you got a couple of guys down. You got those other three guys down in NXT
that yep.
really will add to this division when they do decide to bring them up. And, of course, you still have Ray Jr. possibly if what happened later
yep.
is a thing, Dominic.
Yeah. Oh no, you definitely do. Yeah, that you're getting a strong division, but you got that one guy. There's never going to be another Eddie Guerrero. Don't get me wrong. Eddie Guerrero had so much experience and so much just innate sense of timing and quick wit. There's not going to be that guy, but I'm going to tell you, Angel Garza is damn close. He's damn close, and he's very young. So I think that this is a good sign for him, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. There's going to be another Eddie Guerrero, but you're going to get close to that, like an Eddie Guerrero thing, and I think he probably do a good job as a face, doing the expressions and all the other stuff in the ring.
As long as he still does those, you know, Eddie Guerrero type things, as long as he still cheats to win, as long as he still, you know, does the mind games and everything, he'll be just fine. Anyway, we I guess we should talk about the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits who are backstage talking about their match and how they teamed up to fight the ninjas and how they're going to have a cinematic universe and a Saturday morning cartoon. And this has led, by the way, one of the Revival to tweet out to them, we know, that's why we're glad we're working where we are. There's just no way to come back from what happened at Backlash. There's no way. And the WWE is not even trying. They're doubling down because here comes Tozawa with his ninjas again. And the dumbest thing I have ever heard is other wrestling programs saying, you know, this is kind of racist. It is not. Stop it. Ninjas were Oriental. It's not racist. Ninjas were Oriental. And by the way, the biggest one is an Oriental. And probably two or three of the other ones aren't either. So stop trying to turn this into some nonsense already. Stop it. My God. We're falling all over each other to find racists in the shadows. It's a gimmick. Tozawa is the leader of a group of ninjas, some of which are not Oriental. So I have no idea why you think this is racist. If you tell me it's stupid, yeah, it's stupid. It's very stupid. Now, the big guy, he's a performance center trainee. I don't think he's ready for the ring. That's why they're not. I mean, he's wrestled a couple of matches as a tag team, but I don't think he's ready for whatever. So that's why they're not really letting him do anything just yet. But they decide they're going to have a match tonight. Now, here's the funny thing. They don't let the big guy wrestle. So the guy that they're afraid of, the guy they're all afraid of, now stay outside. And the smallest ninjas get in and just get mauled like animals. And then when they get mauled like animals, Tozawa threatens to release the big guy. And out comes the Big Show, who doesn't do anything to him either. He just mauls the ninjas that are currently in the ring. I don't know where this is. I don't know what this is all about. I don't know why the Big Show had come back. They had already beaten the ninjas. If him and the big guy went nose to nose and you say, well, I guess the Big Show's going to somehow put him over and it's going to be a new character or something, okay. But that's not what happened. Tozawa and his giant ninja fled, and the little ninjas got beat up again. They've already been beat up. And then, you know, they're saying, well, thank you for helping us. Helping us? You did nothing. You already beat them up. Very random, very weird, Mike. I don't know what the hell's going on, but this is not helping either tag team.
Right. I mean, I'm gonna go back in the past a little bit. There's a guy that used to be in the WCCW by the name of Brian Adias. At one time, he did his whole American Ninja deal. He had the Oriental Spike and all that stuff, and he did it very well. He was not an Oriental guy, all right? He was an American guy, but he called himself the American Ninja, okay? So, yeah, it can be done. And look, if anybody, now, granted, I get what you're saying about the big guy. Maybe he's not ready. And I've seen tapes on the amount of people that they have that are down in NXT, down being trained, and there is a black fellow that's from Africa.
That's him, Jordan Mumba, whatever his name is. Yeah, that's him.
That's him. So that's probably who that is. And maybe you're right. Maybe he's not. Maybe they've been that he's not quite ready yet to get in the ring, and that's why he didn't come and confront the Big Show. You were kind of when the Big Show showed up. I was kind of expecting that him to step over the ropes, and then if anything, go nose to nose. All right. Nothing had to happen. No punches, no kicks, whatever. Just stare each other down, you know?
Right, that's all that had to happen. I don't even know why the Big Show came down, to just beat up the ninjas that were already beaten up. It doesn't make any sense. Now, if they went nose to nose and Tozawa kind of told his ninja, no, not right now, that makes sense. What happened here, Todd, didn't make a lot of sense.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that was just one of the It reminds me of Shikara, when they had that animated thing.
Yeah.
Maybe a Shikara a little bit.
Yeah, maybe we'll see an exploding invisible hand grenade or something later. I don't know where this is coming from. Anyway, Seth Rollins gets in the ring and confronts Rey Mysterio via satellite. And he says, look, I know your son is here. My guys are looking for him, but I'm not out there to injure him. I'm not out there to hurt him. Far from it. I want to help him. I want him to join the flock and go on to greater success. And Ray says, no, that's not going to happen. And he says, well, then that's, you know, luckily he's of age. He don't have to listen to you. But he better make the right decision or he's going to be another sacrifice. Here's the problem. Seth Rollins has become irrelevant. And the reason he's become irrelevant is he never wins. He doesn't win in a wrestling match. He doesn't win when there's a gimmick, like a beatdown. It's always his guys that get the ass kicked and over the top they go and run away. He doesn't win anything. He never comes out looking like anything except a guy who he is Bray Wyatt. Seth Rollins has literally morphed into Bray Wyatt, the old Bray Wyatt. A guy who talks a good game, but can't back it up. That's what killed Bray Wyatt's character. Every time he said, I'm ready to take this to another level, and you have no idea what you've unleashed. Yeah, and then he loses. Or somebody comes out and kicks his ass and both of his disciples, and then you're just like, okay, well, I see what you've unleashed, a bunch of bullshit, because you keep talking shit, but nothing ever happens. Well, that's what happened with Seth Rollins. They just keep letting them talk shit, but nothing happens. And once again, Seth Rollins is made to look like a damn fool because while he's talking, Dominic sneaks up behind him, kicks his ass, kicks both of the disciples' asses, never ever having had one wrestling match, and disappears into the crowd because they can't catch him while Seth Rollins looks disappointed and upset and just looks like a complete idiot. He doesn't look like a threat. He just looks like a complete idiot. Now, I thought you'd hit the reset button with him when you let him do what you did to Rey Mysterio, and I thought, well, this is going to be the beginning of hitting the reset button with Seth Rollins, where he doesn't look like an idiot. He looks like a very cold, calculating, you know, cult leader type person who, you know, a megalomaniac. No, he just gets his ass kicked every week. He got his ass kicked this week, too. He'll probably get his ass kicked next week. And even if the ultimate goal is to actually have Dominic join Seth Rollins' group, which I've rumor is that could potentially happen, it still doesn't matter because Seth Rollins is irrelevant. He's beaten every time, whether it's an actual wrestling match he's beaten in or he's beaten in a skit where he's supposed to be doing a beatdown or something horrible. He never gets a chance to really do anything horrible because he's stopped, always. His feud with Aleister Black isn't even over. And he's not going to win that one either. So at this stage of the game, Mike, Seth Rollins, who's one of their better guys, and he's doing as good a job as he can, the way he is being booked here, it's making his heel persona pretty much irrelevant.
Right, and frankly, the way he's being booked makes that care, if they want to put Dominic with him, makes Dominic look, well, idiotic because, well, what's he going to do for Dominic's career if he's not winning?
Right.
Know? You know, so.
That's exactly right.
I mean, right, and think about this. They've already floated, I've seen on all over the internet a few of the names, particularly one of the names they've maybe chosen for Dominic, and it's something like Prince Mysterio or something like that, you know. And it's going to be interesting how they play this up. They're going to have to start having Seth Rollins win, you know.
It's almost too late, Mike. It's almost too late. If they had Seth Rollins virtually undefeated up to this point, and all of his men doing really, really well, and Dominic did flip you could easily have had him say, "Dad, no offense to you, but everything Seth Rollins touches turns to gold. When's the last time you had your hands on any gold? You're 10 years past your prime. There's nothing you can do for me. Seth can make me who I want to be." Then you've set up something really good. You've set up Rey Mysterio against his son and against Seth Rollins' brainwashed crew. And there's a little bit of realism to it, Mike, because you could see a young kid being sucked into it by saying, "Well, my dad hasn't won anything in a long time. All the Seth Rollins guys are doing well. I want to be a champion. I want to be doing well. I got to be in that group because they're the ones he's the one who can elevate me, not my dad." The way it is now, Seth Rollins hasn't elevated anybody. He's done exactly the opposite.
Absolutely. I mean, at the beginning of this, when we first saw and heard from Dominic, the rumors were that the first thing he wanted to do was tag team with his dad at one point. I mean, to me, right now, it would make more sense to have him do that than to join Seth Rollins' group. Because at least his dad can say, well, we'll come together and we'll win. We might possibly win a championship, you know, and it would be believable because, well, he's at least within the last few years, he's held championships. So, yeah, you know, it's going to be that would make more sense right now than to put him with Seth Rollins.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. What's he going to say? "Well, Dad, I think Seth can take me to the next level like he did Buddy Mur-" Oh, no, I guess he didn't do it to Buddy. But he did with... I guess he didn't do it with Austin. But look how successful he... Well, no, he's not that successful either. It doesn't make any sense. It does not make any sense. The only way this makes sense, if Seth Rollins elevates the careers of everybody he touches and he's doing well too, because then you could see him luring away a young kid with delusions of grandeur saying, "This is my shortcut to success." And Rey Mysterio trying to pull him back, saying there is no shortcut to success in wrestling. This is a great story if it's told right. This is not being told right, Todd. It's being told completely wrong.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this whole thing with Dominic, I'm going to say this. He's going to turn on his dad. We're going to call this down the road. We're calling this.
Yeah, there's no question, but it's still being told wrong. Why does he turn on his dad? What's the motivation? There isn't one, because Seth Rollins is not elevating anybody's career. Anyway, the Iconics defeat Liv Morgan and Natalya in a really, really, really short match. And that's just to further Natalya's, I guess, heel turn. Like, nobody cares. I'm sorry, nobody cares. I wish I could tell you somebody cares, but nobody cares. Oh. Bayley and Sasha come out. It's Bayley's birthday. And they're saying, "Well, we're going to go down to NXT. Boy, are they plugging that show to try to get the ratings up, huh? We're going to go down to NXT, and we're going to fight Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Knox, and then we're going to come over to the SmackDown, and out come the Iconics." I don't know why they want to do a heel versus heel, but that's where they're going with this. And actually, I like the Iconics better now that they're not so goofy. Before, they were just too goofy with the whole strike a pose. Iconic, they don't do that anymore. Thankfully. And they slap Sasha. It gets Bayley to say, "Yes, yes, we'll have the match with you guys next week." And that was actually an okay spot. It's an okay spot because they're playing off the past a little bit with the Iconic saying, "We're the ones who beat you at WrestleMania and sent you into the tizzy that had Sasha walk out and Bayley have to start her own career. We started all this." And they kind of did. So I'm okay with this. I think it's all right. I'm. It's a little weird that you're doing the heel-to-heel thing, Mike, but it makes sense from a history perspective, I guess.
Right. It makes sense from a heel perspective. And the thing with the heel versus heel, unless you're planning on flipping one of these two teams, which you're probably not going to flip Bailey and Sasha, right? So
right.
If you're planning on somehow flipping the Iconics, which that whole gimmick is a heel gimmick, the Iconics.
I know. Yep.
So that wouldn't make sense either. And look, the whole thing with Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Knox, when they go down there and have that match, we don't expect them to win that match. In fact, I fully expect something to happen with Rachel, what's her name, and the other one that's with her, you know.
If not, maybe the Iconics show up. Who knows? Maybe there's going to be some kind of thing with that. Apollo Crews is approached backstage by MVP, who I will tell you this. I was never a fan of MVP in the ring, but he's very good on the mic. He's very, very, very good on the mic. And he explains to him, look, it's great that you're a champion. It's great that you're a fighting champion. But you know what? A fighting champion sometimes makes mistakes. And it's not about being a fighting champion. It's about knowing who you're fighting and when you're fighting them in order to keep that belt. And I think I could help you with it. To which Apollo Crews basically says, yeah, well, no, I'm a fighting champion. If I can't be a straight-up fighting champion, I'd rather not be a champion at all. But, hey, thanks. And he says, look, the only way you're going to keep that belt is with my help. So now the threat has been laid down. And we may be seeing Bobby Lashley's next feud, because he's sure as hell not beating Drew McIntyre. But if we're not seeing Bobby Lashley's next feud, we may very well be seeing Apollo Crews slowly start that heel turn. One of the two. But at least it's a piece to a puzzle, and we're not sure where it's going. I'm glad they threw this in, because it makes Apollo Crews' character interesting now. Because I'm not sure where it's going. Is he going to flip heel and go with MVP, which would be a really good career move since he's not good on the mic? Or is MVP going to sick Lashley on him because he can't get the job done with Drew McIntyre, or perhaps he's going to find somebody else to manage, which would be kind of good. I wouldn't mind seeing him with Shelton Benjamin. Benjamin's still got plenty of life in him. Either way, Apollo Crews beats Shelton Benjamin, but he kind of beats him Angel Garza style, where Benjamin tries to get his feet on the ropes, the referee catches him, so when Apollo Crews rolls up Benjamin, he puts his hand on the ropes and holds it. Referee doesn't catch Crews, and Crews gets away with the victory and kind of laughs it off and says, hey, man, you know, eye for an eye. You tried it. You failed. I did it. I like that part of it. I think that it's much more interesting now to watch where we're going to go with Apollo Crews than it was before, Mike, because now you've given us a couple of options to watch for, either his potential heel turn and alliance with MVP, or a feud with MVP and either his current wrestler or perhaps adding someone to his stable.
Right. And look, don't believe we were talking about a month or so ago, a possibility of Apollo being added to that AAA group with Selena Vega. Now, that might very well be in the far background, but don't put that past them to throw that little wrinkle back into the mix where, you know, maybe Selena Vega comes to Apollo Crews and says something to him, you know? So you got, in other words, you might possibly have two managers going after Apollo Crews. Well, and we know he's going to turn heel at some point. A slow heel turn is coming. It's just he's going to have a decision. He might have a decision to make on just who he goes with, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot to that. There's a lot of branches on that tree, Todd, so it's made Apollo Crews interesting, whereas before he wasn't.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I think this will help Apollo Crews have that mouthpiece with him, with MVP as his manager and everything, and have Bobby Lashley also. I think he'd be pretty good with MVP as a big mouthpiece than anything. right now.
Absolutely. Now, we did the thing with MVP and Bobby Lashley, of course, where Lana had came out and her and MVP got into it, something awful, and Bobby Lashley blurts out that he wants a divorce and storms away with MVP. That was a good spot. Although, you know, when you look back at all the stuff you did with Rusev and all of this big hype just to get to this, not a great ending, not a great payoff. But backstage, R-Truth, who's going to later on team with Drew McIntyre to fight MVP and Bobby Lashley, confronts Bobby Lashley and is trying to send his, I guess he's trying to send condolences, but doesn't know the word and says everything else. But this is where MVP is so good, because MVP plays it off so well as, I'm a serious manager, and he's very annoying, but he won't go away, so I'll try at least to help him spit out what he has to say, because he's just going to annoy me until he does. He has the ability to convey that sense of, in other words, he sells R-Truth. He's able to sell R-Truth's annoyance factor to the nth degree. And finally says, do you mean your condolences? No, not that. I mean, it's just that, you know, you got taken to Claymore country and you must be jet lagged after that. I don't even know where that is. And then your wife wants a divorce and they're saying, look, you trying to make a joke out of this? And he says, no, I'm not trying to make a joke out of it. And he says, oh, well, you know, you're going to be teaming with Drew McIntyre later, but he's not here now. To which R-Truth is like, okay, bye. But they go looking for R-Truth. And they find R-Truth under the ring, where R-Truth is literally saying, there's ninjas under here, which is which is probably one of the best continuums of a joke I've heard on Raw in a long time. That was actually funny. I actually laughed out loud at that. Why is there ninjas underneath this ring? Then he climbs out, and it looks like he's going to get beat down, but Drew McIntyre comes to help him. And they goad R-Truth into putting both belts on the line in a tag team match. This is a very smart angle, because Drew McIntyre has been booked so strong that now you say, well, all that has to happen is R-Truth loses. Drew McIntyre doesn't have to lose, and R-Truth loses all the time. So that made it a very interesting dynamic. And I just think that Drew McIntyre has done a fantastic job. If I was, and I know he's not on the same show, but if I was Roman Reigns, I would be worried. I would be worried, because there is no question in my mind that Roman Reigns was Vince McMahon's chosen one to be the face of the WWE. And the more they see Drew McIntyre, the more Vince McMahon says, maybe I can go this way. Because Drew McIntyre does have that other factor that we've mentioned many times on this show, where he can make a good appearance. He's articulate. He's well spoken, and he has a sense of humor. He's not, what's the right word for it? He's going to make a good representation of the company. And that's important. That's real important to Vince McMahon. Trust me. And I think the more we see Drew McIntyre, the more we see, yeah, he can do this. He really can. Look no further than this. Let's just say this was Roman Reigns. Do you think that this angle was going to come out that good if it was Roman Reigns and R-Truth and the belts on the line? Do you think all those little nuances of Drew McIntyre saying, look, Truth, can you be serious for just a minute? You do understand what you've done. You do understand you put both of these belts on the line, right? You do understand we could lose everything. And R-Truth saying, you're right. I'm going to fix this. And then comes back and says, I fixed it. I went and talked to the powers that be, and the only belt that's going to be on the line in this tag team match is yours. And the look on Drew McIntyre's face is just priceless. He's What do you mean you fixed it? How does that help? And then he just realizes there's no point in talking to him because he thinks he did the right thing, and it's just, I'm just going to have to handle this myself. You can't get a better execution of this angle than Drew McIntyre did, or R-Truth. You can't get a better execution of this angle. And you wasn't going to get that with Roman Reigns. I'm telling you, you are not going to get it with Roman Reigns. As much as I like Roman Reigns, he doesn't have that ability to facial expression and mannerisms convey what he's thinking. I'm looking at Drew McIntyre and I'm seeing him saying, this blithering freaking idiot has now backed me into a corner, but he means well. He's just, there's no dealing with him. So I'm just going to have to do this. There's no point in being mad at him because he thinks he's right. To get all that from a few facial expressions is priceless. It's priceless. He's done every possible thing. If there's truly a person who has earned the top spot in the WWE, it's Drew McIntyre. And I mean earned it. Busted his ass to change his physique, his whole gimmick, his mannerism, everything about him. After being fired. And truthfully, I think he's doing a better job than Roman Reigns probably could do, Mike.
I agree with you. And here's the payoff. You talked about, here's the payoff for that whole situation. Think about it. What did it just say about R-Truth? He never wins, right? Or he almost never wins.
Right.
Who ended up getting the pinfall?
Right. And the better payoff is, not only did he end up getting the pinfall, but who allowed him to get the pinfall by kind of launching him in there like that and saying, there's no hard feelings. I'm actually going to let this guy win just to make a stronger point that I can pull this off by myself. In other words, everybody realizes Drew McIntyre carried that team, but he let R-Truth win and used R-Truth in a way that he's like, I'm confident enough in him that he can get this done. It was very well done, Mike.
It really was, and it's very apropos that you use the term chosen one, because just a few minutes ago, because
yep.
Remember, what was it, about 6 or 7, 8, 10 years ago? Well,
yep.
What did Vince McMahon call Drew McIntyre?
Right. The chosen one, and that's exactly why I'm saying if I'm Roman Reigns, I'm worried. Because before there was a Roman Reigns, Vince McMahon said, this guy's going to be the future. And now that he has corrected all the things that Vince McMahon didn't like about the old Drew McIntyre, Vince McMahon looks like a genius if he becomes that, and Vince McMahon likes to look like a genius. So Vince McMahon could very easily say, this is my new favorite pet, so to speak, you know? And Roman Reigns could be left out in the cold a little bit. Because McIntyre is doing a superior job. And here's the thing about McIntyre. He's no better wrestler, technically, I don't think, than Roman Reigns, depending on your perspective. But he's so much better on the mic. And he's so much better with his facial expressions and his mannerisms. Makes a big difference, Todd, and I thought this was a great angle. Let me get Todd on the phone here. A little trouble with the phone lines. Go ahead, Todd.
You're absolutely right, right there, like you said, about the R-Truth and everything else. Some of the other skit he did with Lashley and MVP, I noticed when Lashley looked away from the camera a little bit with R-Truth last night, too, as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, very difficult to be around R-Truth and not laugh. That's why I say MVP's doing a great job. MVP is the manager that the WWE needs. Absolutely needs a manager like this. Because he can be deadly serious and threatening and whatever, but he can also be... The beauty of our MVP is he's so deadly serious. I'm the only way forward, and I'm going to make sure you never, ever, ever have the belt unless you come with me, and I'm going to lead this guy to whatever. He's not a goofy manager like like Jimmy Hart or something. He's not a comedic guy like Bobby Heenan. He's dead serious. But when he's thrown into these comedic skits to play the straight man, he does a great job of looking frustrated and annoyed at somebody else's ineptness and nonsense. And it bothers him. And you can tell, like, it's bothering him. You can tell that R-Truth is bothering MVP. This is the last thing I need right now. I'm trying to have a pep talk with Bobby Lashley, and here comes this idiot, and he's annoying me. And that's funny. That's a great comedic chop to be able to do. The serious annoyed guy who's annoyed by the non-serious comedic guy. MVP does that perfectly. I don't care if you want him as a producer to the show. He needs to be a manager. He needs to have more than Bobby Lashley. He needs some more airtime. Period. So I'm very curious to where this is going with Apollo Crews. Hopefully it's going in a direction where MVP gets at least one more guy in his stable. The match itself was what it was. I never thought for 1 minute Drew McIntyre would lose the title because it wasn't the feature match. And if he was going to lose the title, it sure as hell would be the feature match. So that was bad on the WWE's part. And as it turns out, that should have been the feature match. Because if you had to put that in a spot where this was the last match of the night, I very well might have said, uh-oh, they're going to pull this with Drew McIntyre. They didn't want to pull it and make it look clean at Backlash. They're going to have R-Truth take the loss. They're going to have R-Truth take the loss. And then they're going to set up Lashley and McIntyre again. I really would have felt that, but not when it's, you know, before even Asuka and Nia Jax. Speaking of Asuka and Nia Jax, we get the rematch. There's nothing I can say. I wish I could say more than I already have. Nia Jax is not a good wrestler. It's not that she's lazy. I don't think she's necessarily lazy. She's just not in shape to wrestle. You can tell. When she tries to take a bump, it's like, okay, I'm supposed to go over the ring now. Let me lay down very carefully like I'm taking a nap, roll out with the greatest of ease. And it's just like, well, that didn't look like it hurt at all. So now that it doesn't look like it hurts at all and you're laying there like it hurt, that's dumb. If you can't have a good match with Asuka, you can't have a good match. And this was not a good match. And for the life of me, I do not know why you're protecting Nia Jax by having it look like Asuka only won because of a quick count by a referee who was annoyed that Nia Jax pushed him. Is that the way you want to present Asuka as champion? I just don't know. For the life of me, I don't know where this is going. I thought for sure we were going to see Charlotte Flair come out and we were going to get some kind of a three-way at Extreme Rules. That's what I thought was going to happen. It didn't happen, Mike, and I don't even know what the point was of this match. If you were going to have this, then that should have been the Extreme Rules match.
Right, and especially after what happened. Was it right before the match or whatever, when Ric Flair was sitting back there talking to Charlotte?
Right.
You know, and talking about championships and matches and different things. And I mean, it looked like a candid father-daughter conversation, but we knew what it was about. I mean, basically, it's about you could be the female version of me winning 16 championships, that type of thing, you know. And then to put it, you know, like you said, after that, like I'm going to say, after that conversation, I was really expecting Charlotte to come out there and either interfere or distract somebody or whatever, you know. And,
yep.
You know, and it didn't happen. But again, here's the deal with Nia Jax. Compare her to, compare her to Tamina. Tamina's, what, almost 10 years older than her.
Mm-hmm.
But at least with her, you don't get the feeling that she's going to hurt anybody, Tamina. And at least with her, I mean, she's at least competent enough in the ring, and if you give her something to do, as if that thing that they pulled, that skit that they pulled now, she can at least pull it off. That's three things that really Nia Jax can't do. You can't. I mean, they made something. She tried to make something to break in Becky Lynch's fate. Didn't work.
All of Nia Jax's gimmicks have to come at the expense of I really hurt somebody, so I can play a gimmick up like I meant to do it. Well, that's not a very good gimmick. I mean, if you do it once, you can get away with it. But when it's over and over and over again, people start to say, well, maybe you're doing it on purpose just so you keep your gimmick, because, I mean, this is getting ridiculous. The problem with Nia Jax is she can't even take a bump. Mae Young, at 80-some-odd years old, took heavier bump than Nia Jax will take. That's ludicrous. I watch her go over the rope, and I'm just like, whatever, my God. Could you do it slower and more carefully? It's like, okay, you kicked me. Let me take 3 steps to the rope, not run, like your momentum from the kick actually launched me over. Let me walk 3 steps, bend over. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it looks so ridiculous that you're just like, well, I don't know. I mean, that looks like somebody who's training to wrestle. And walking through the match saying, okay, this is where you'd kick me, and I'm not going to do it full force now, but I'd fly out of the ring. But right now, I'll just do it this way. That's what it looks like. It looks like she's walking through the match. I don't know. You want to keep her to appease the Rock? Fine. But you better not put her in major situations, because you're getting stinkeroo matches. And when you can't get a good match, when you got Asuka as your opponent, I don't know what to tell you. I just don't know what to tell you, because Becky Lynch sure had no problem. Charlotte Flair sure had no problem. And a whole host of NXT girls didn't have any problem. So there you go. So that was very anticlimactic, and to be honest, that they should have had the Drew McIntyre thing there at least if you were going to leave Randy Orton and Christian for last. But Randy Orton and Christian had absolutely no point being last. Should have been McIntyre, because then every person would have said, well, if this is the main event, there is a chance R-Truth is going to lose this for him. Being an hour before the main event or 40 minutes before the main event, we all knew that wasn't going to happen. Placement matters, unfortunately, nowadays. So we get to Christian, who comes out in street clothes, which is good, because if he had come out in his wrestling trunks, I was going to tear all of my hair out. But he didn't. He went out in the street clothes. And Ric Flair had tried to tell him in the dressing room, you don't have to do this. You absolutely do not have to do this. No one's going to think less of you. Just forget it. Randy Orton's in a different spot right now. You don't want to deal with this. Edge doesn't want you to do it. Nobody wants you to do it. And he said, nah, I respect you, but I have to go do it. And what ends up happening? Ric Flair comes out to try to put an end to it and actually gives him a nut shot. And all I can think of is Ric Flair is going to align himself with Randy Orton, and they're going to have some kind of a relationship that's going to lead Randy Orton into a match with Drew McIntyre, and this is a very, very good idea. This is a very, very strong idea. So, the McMahon era with Bruce Pritchard so far has been a little bit of a mixed bag. We're seeing perhaps the flipping of Angel Garza. I approve of that if it's handled right. We are seeing MVP perhaps further his stable. I approve of that 100%. We're seeing a lot of emphasis being put on Drew McIntyre as being the leader of at least Raw, if not the company, and he's doing a fabulous job, and I agree with that. R-Truth is being used exactly how R-Truth should be used, in a comedic way, but in a way that his comedy could affect major things in the WWE. That's a brilliant move. Randy Orton is being handled precisely the right way now. And now all of a sudden, if he's aligned himself with Ric Flair and he's going to be next up for Drew McIntyre, this is going to be a very, very, very good build-up. Whereas before the Edge situation, Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre would have been a yawn fest. So that's a good idea. the Viking Raiders and the friggin' ninjas, not a good idea. This whole cinemagraphic universe crapola, not a good idea. You've ruined your tag team division. You've absolutely ruined it. Continuing to try to force feed Nia Jax as a major threat to anybody, not a good idea. Not a good idea at all. And undermining Seth Rollins by having him look stupid every time he sticks his nose out of the dressing room, not a good idea. So it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag. I do see improvement. I do see some improvement. But you got to correct some of these things. Get this thing done with Nia Jax, and you want to get her in a feud with somebody else, fine. Far away from the title picture, she doesn't belong there. Get Seth Rollins on track. It's too late already, but better late than never. Get him on track and get his people on track. Get Murphy and Theory on track. Before you pull this thing with Dominic and Ray, make sure that the idea behind it is, hey, Dominic, look what could be yours. These guys had nothing, and now they're successful. Because otherwise, it just looks like Dominic's an idiot and says, yeah, these guys, you know, had a future, and now they're just lackeys and doing nothing. Seth Rollins used to be champion. He's nothing now. Yeah, I think I'll join them because he'll help my career. Duh. That's a very dumb angle. So you got to correct that. And you got to get your tag team division back. You got to stop this ridiculousness with the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits and get your tag team division back. If you can do those things, then you're on the right track. So this is a mixed bag. I'm going to give it a B minus because at least I see improvement. But make no mistake, there were parts of the show that were a D minus. Asuka's match with Nia Jax, D minus. She cannot perform to any great standard at all. And you booked this match terribly and didn't make Asuka look like anything but another lucky champion. Really big mistake. That's a D minus mistake. Once again, having Seth Rollins look weak. D minus. If you really wanted this to work with Dominic and the end game is to have Dominic join, you should have made it look like Seth Rollins has Dominic. They found him, they got him. And Ray's got to come. And then you say, hey, Ray, you better show up the show next week. Or you'll be watching something you don't want to see. Because if you're not here next week in person, we got something for him. And then if Ray shows up and it turns out this was a bluff and Dominic actually lured his father into a trap, that's way worse. That's a million times worse. That's a much better angle. And you got to get the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits away from each other. Forget this cinematographic universe and start having tag team matches. How's that sound? If you can accomplish those things, then you're in the right direction because you got the leader you need. You got Drew McIntyre. You now have the main heel you need in Randy Orton. And if you add Ric Flair to him, that's really good. You have a great manager in MVP who can absolutely take all the heat off people who have no mic ability. Absolutely can take it off of them. So you've got some good things going for you. Some really good things. Now can you capitalize on them? B minus from me, Mike. What's your thoughts?
B minus from me as well. And here's something else to think about. When Tozawa was backstage with the ninjas and he was confronting R-Truth and basically saying, I'm going to take your title, points at the title. Yeah, he's sort of, his English is not the best, but you get the point. He's going to, and that tells me something. If he's back there with those ninjas,
yep,
and it tells me they're going to flip him.
Yeah, listen, if they do a thing with the ninjas just being a comedy thing with R-Truth and the 24/7 belt, I guess I'm okay with it. I mean, because you're not going to do anything too serious, I guess, with R-Truth. So I guess I'm okay with it, but then you got to kill the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits, because one of these things is enough. One comedic thing is enough. And then you might as well forget the Giant Ninja then, because he's not going to be a threat. If they're going to be a comedic act with Tozawa, I'm all for that, but then you can't have a serious one, you know? So I don't know what they'll do with that. Aside from that, we got to figure out where some of the other people are. We didn't see Aleister Black this week. We didn't see – there's a few people we didn't see this week. The Kevin Owens thing, I don't know where this is going. Kevin Owens has become the least interesting guy on Raw. You want to talk about a career that's going absolutely nowhere. And for the life of me, I don't understand it, because when he was on his way back and he was going to do that, you know, I'm the everyman sort of situation. Here I am with my kids in a bowling alley eating French fries and hamburgers, and here I am, you know, at the movies and just being your typical whatever. I said, they're going to make him huge. He is going to be a different sort of a Stone Cold Steve Austin. Instead of being a redneck beer drinking whatever, he's going to be a typical guy. No, I don't hit the gym a lot. Yeah, I eat junk food and my kids bother me, but I can fight. And I said, you know what? You're going to have something with him. And you took that and just ran it to the mud, to the point where now Kevin Owens is not an interesting character. And he looks like he's bored, and he looks like he's just going through the motions, and I don't blame him. But I blame you. Yeah, I mean, you've got a guy there that you can do a lot with, and you're doing nothing with him. You're doing absolutely nothing with him. It's a damn shame. Last thing I want to say is that yesterday I ordered my AJ Styles t-shirt and my Angel Garza t-shirt, just like I said I was going to, because I'm going to support people who decide they want to be professionals. And I know that a lot of people know why I'm supporting AJ Styles, because Styles said he was not going to make any comments of any political nature or any whatever thing, because that's not his job. And I agree with him 1,000%, and I'm supporting him because of that. Angel Garza, the reason I'm supporting him, it's because, in case you people didn't notice, during the real heart of the pandemic, where people really were scared and thought this thing could be way deadlier than it turned out to be, Angel Garza, Andrade, Zelina Vega were front and center on every single episode. Sometimes they wrestled twice. Sometimes they'd come out and do a solo match, and then they do a tag team match or whatever, and it's like, man, they're all over Raw. They were keeping Raw together. When a lot of the other wrestlers were saying, I'm not showing up. They were saying, not only will I show up, I'll pull double duty. I'll wrestle three times if I have to. And I hope that they get rewarded for that. Because at that particular time, things were a lot more serious. Things looked a lot graver. Let's put it that way. We didn't know a lot. We know a lot more now. But back then, we didn't know a lot. And those guys were willing to say, hey, it's what I do. I'm here. If I'm going to wrestle once, I might as well wrestle twice. That's how bad they want this. And when you want it that bad, and you're willing to do that, I think you should be rewarded for it, Mike. I really do. So I'm hoping that if their merchandise sales go up, we will see their worth to the company go up.
And frankly, I agree with you there. And look, one other person that should be talked about, that where is this person, is Bianca Belair. Because I think she has a ton of potential. But where has she been the last month or so? Where is she?
I don't have any idea. Bianca Belair, Carmella, there are a few people that I'm scratching my head saying, you know, where are these people? We haven't seen them in a long, long time. And that is precisely what I mean when I say there are people who want this bad enough. Angel Garza, Andrade, Zelina Vega, Aleister Black, there were people who were there all the time. While Sami Zayn was hiding in, you know, his broom closet, afraid the COVID was going to get him. Roman Reigns, I'll keep out of it. Roman Reigns has a weakened immune system. He had a pregnant wife and small children at home. I don't blame him. I said on the show, I don't blame him. And I still don't blame him. But it might be time to get back to work now, or very close to now, before you come back to no spot. Because other people are back, and they're not getting it. See, that's the thing you got to remember. It's almost like, remember back in the old days where the king used to have somebody taste his food in case somebody wanted to poison him? So he'd say, well, you take a bite of this food. And then if in 20 minutes you're not rolling on the floor, I guess I can eat it. Well, they've eaten all the food. So now you're starving to death. And you're like, well, at least I'm not poisoned. Well, that's dumb. They've not just taken one bite. They've taken bite after bite after bite after bite after bite. And nothing's happening to them. When are you going to eat? Because at this point in time, you're sitting there starving yourself to death for fear of being poisoned. If you get that analogy, Mike.
I do get the analogy, you know, and that's the point. And I mean, remember the whole gimmick of way back when with the king and the kiss my foot match, you know, and
yep.
That type of thing, you know, and what was that all about? Well, he stuck his foot. I mean, he made his the gimmick was that he was going to make his foot so rich. You know, bad to kiss that you might could have gotten a disease from it, right?
Yep.
And the people didn't, you know, the guys that he was going after at the time, Jerry Lawler, you know, they didn't say, oh, we're not going to do this and we're not going to do that. They stayed where they bought into the gimmick and they did their jobs, you know?
Well, the idea behind this is just, it's as simple as this. Angel Garza, Andretti, Aleister Black, Austin Theory, Seth Rollins, they've been there from the very beginning, and they've not gotten sick. They've tasted the food. It's not poison. So it might be time to come back to work. You know, if your store closes down because they say, well, there was a leak, there was a chemical leak. Let's say you work in a factory. There's a chemical leak and it could lead to, you know, illness and sickness and possibly even death. So we close the factory down for a couple of weeks. And then 35% of the workforce comes back because they say it's safe. And then 50% and then 70%. And you're saying, no, I'm staying home. At some point, you got to say, well, but they've worked there for months and they're not sick. So now why are you staying out? The risk is next to zero at this point. Otherwise, they'd be sick. That's my point. It doesn't make any sense. I could see it if, 3 weeks, 4 weeks into their TV tapings, you said, man, 9, 10 of these top guys are falling sick. Then you say, well, then that's no good. You're going to have to close this down. Even 3 or 4. But nobody has. Is Angel Garza sick? No. Is Andrade sick? No. Is Zelina Vega sick? No. Is Seth Rollins or Austin Theory or Buddy Murphy or any of those people? Is any of them people sick? No. So quite obviously, is the Street Profits sick? Is the Viking Raiders sick? No. So at some point you have to say, I think it might be safe. I think it might be safe to go back to work. And if you don't want to, then fine. But don't cry when you come back and your spot is gone because there are people who wanted it bad enough to go back to work. Todd, what's your rating on this, Raw?
I got to go with you guys, the same exact grade.
Well, we got B minuses all the way through. Look, there were some great parts. I mean, there were some parts that I honestly said that's A plus. I think the whole thing with MVP, Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre, and R-Truth was an A+. Right down to what I think was one of the best lines ever presented on Raw when R-Truth hides under the ring and says there are ninjas underneath this ring. That, Mike, was absolute 100% gold.
Oh, it was. And look, here's the deal. I go back. I'm go back to that whole thing with R-Truth and Tozawa back in the back. To me, that was gold. Yeah, it's somewhat of a comedy gimmick, but again, it's him threatening him that I'm going to come and take that title away from you, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a good idea.
But to interject, now you got a serious situation where Bobby Lashley and MVP are going to beat the hell out of Drew McIntyre's opponent that night, so that Drew McIntyre will be at a very big disadvantage. And here's two serious guys coming to double team and beat the hell out of R-Truth. And they hear him under the ring saying, "Hey, oh, let me go. There are ninjas underneath this ring." What the hell's a ninja doing underneath the ring? And for them to even keep a straight face is amazing. And then what does it do? It leads directly into a serious situation where R-Truth puts both belts on the line, with Drew McIntyre being aghast, but what's he going to do back out at this point? Perfect. It's a perfectly executed angle. That's an A-plus angle. But then when you get down to the Viking Raiders and the nonsense there, that's not a perfectly executed angle. Or Asuka and Nia Jax with that nonsense that the only way she won is because the referee fast counted Nia because he was mad. That's a horrible way to present your champion. Randy Orton, that was an A-plus angle. Especially if you're going to add Ric Flair, because if you add Ric Flair to this mix and Ric Flair is going to manage Randy Orton to a title, and that's what you're going to say, is Ric Flair is going to say, "I'm back with Randy Orton and we're taking Drew McIntyre's title," that's a really good feud. MVP doing a fantastic job. Drew McIntyre doing an above fantastic job. Asuka doing a fantastic job. Angel Garza doing a fantastic job. Randy Orton doing a fantastic job. Those guys are doing fantastic jobs. Some of the other people got to catch up. Now, some of it's not their fault. The Street Profits can do a great job, and so can the Viking Raiders, but they got to get away from this nonsense. Now, if you want to have R-Truth and the ninjas stumbling all around as a joke, that's funny. That's fine. I'm good with that. I think it would be funny if they carry this thing on where there are ninjas everywhere, like in the old Star Trek episode where there are tribbles all over the place, and you don't think they're multiplying. There's ninjas all over the place. You know, that's a running joke. You know, you could have somebody come in and say, "Why are there ninjas at catering?" That'd be hilarious. And it would kind of lead it into that comedic thing. But then, you know, if you're going to be serious with this giant ninja, that's a little different. Derek's saying, "I'm a little bit worried about Drew's hesitancy." Yeah, I'm not. I'm not at all, Derek, and I'll tell you why. Because R-Truth is a jabron, and he doesn't take anything seriously. And so Drew McIntyre looks at him and says, "Bobby Lashley could kill you. And I may be distracted. I may not be able to help you. And Bobby Lashley just isolates you and kills you, and I lose my belt. And you take your belt so non-seriously. You're like, I know how it feels to lose a belt. I lost mine, and it was gone for a couple of days sometimes." And Drew McIntyre says, "Look at him. What the hell are you talking about? Your belt's not even serious. It doesn't matter if you lose it. This is the main belt, and you've just put it on the line the day after a pay-per-view. And I don't even have to lose." That's a brilliant angle. I'm not at all worried about his hesitancy, because he wasn't afraid to face Lashley. He was afraid that R-Truth would lose the match for him, because correctly he figured out R-Truth is not good. He loses all the time. He can't even hang on to his own belt. How do I trust him to not screw up this match? That's a very strong angle. So a B-minus from us all. I thought it was if this is the beginning of the McMahon-Pritchard era, it was off to a mixed start. Some great things, some bad things, but I'll give it another week or two and we'll see. There were some things here I loved, and there were some things here I absolutely hated. So we're just going to have to wait and see which way this goes. Hopefully we'll know more in a week. And we will see you on Friday with our AEW NXT report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.